Alrighty, righty. Just wanted to give you some of my social media stuff. I'm going to be working on the low birth rate stuff, so I've got some bookmarked here. So the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Anthony Kiedis, 52, with his girlfriend Helena, who's 19. And I guess a smoker. And people are grossed out by this 52-year-old guy with a 19-year-old a woman. And I don't know why. I mean, I get obviously it's a huge age gap. And is it likely to lead to marriage and so on? But he's at the top of his game, right? So he's a relatively youthful-looking fellow. And he's famous and he's wealthy. And I wouldn't say necessarily that he's super good-looking, but, you know, he's a status symbol to the girl. I don't think it's great. Probably not going to lead to marriage. But I don't know exactly what the major issue is. Obviously, I would not want my daughter to date a guy who's in his 50s. But he's at his peak dating value as a wealthy, famous, successful guy. And she's at her peak dating value as a young, attractive, she's got a bit of woman who played the elf in Lord of the Rings. I can't remember her name. She's got Liv Tyler. She's got a little bit of that vibe going on. It probably is a short-term relationship, but yeah, so men, when they are at the peak of their dating value, will often date women at the peak of their dating value. You may not like it, but if you're going to say that men at the peak of their dating value can't date who they want, well, one of the problems you're going to have is men aren't going to try and achieve that much. One of the reasons why this, you know, semi-skeevy-looking fellow, this semi-skeevy-looking guy became a rock star was to get the girls. So if you deny that, you won't get a lot of achievement. So I thought this was interesting. A few years ago, says this fellow, I had a professional interaction with an archetypical liberal cat lady. Smart but not brilliant, about 35, academic title, PhD, but low salary, unmarried cats, no kids. These people sacrifice a great deal for a credential inscrutable to over 90% of the people, and for the 10% of elites who know what the credential is, it's not that impressive because many careers are more interesting and fun and pay better. So invariably, these people who are self-important but have middling status and live lives that feel small become maniacally over-invested in politics to compensate. Without being mean-spirited, I think it's fair to point out that these women's politics are fake, that they're compensating for personal and professional disappointments, and that what they're engaged in is therapeutic performance. Yeah, it's very sad. The academic world, I looked into it, of course. I got my graduate degree. I got a master's degree. I was looking at a PhD, but I was in my sort of mid-20s at the time, and I thought, gee, it's going to take me 7 years to finish my PhD, you know, 5 to 7 years, and another 5 years to get a tenure-track position. And of course, the diversity hires would probably have blocked me. I was aware of that. It was just coming in when I was younger. And I thought, gee, I'm going to be in my mid to late 30s before I have a stable job. That's too late to really start a family. So it just didn't seem particularly wise. A lot of people go down that route, thinking that they're going to get a lot of social status. And you kind of end up in this no man's land, I guess, literally a no man's land. So if you are an academic woman, then, you know, men, generally, we don't care about you getting a PhD, right? What it means is that you're going to feel that you're going to make great sacrifices to have kids and raise them. And so the women who want really successful men, what the successful men want, of course, after you've made your money and all of that, what the successful men want is a legacy, right? You've made your money, you've had your success, and now you want your wife and your kids. So a very educated woman is going to be a very prickly and difficult mother and wife, a housemaker and so on. She's going to feel underutilized. She's going to be frustrated and annoyed. So for a man who wants a wife and kids, which is what the successful men want, she's just not going to be suitable. But she's too academically credentialed to date below her, right? So she's not going to date a guy who's got a high school education or even an undergrad, maybe even a master's and so on. But it is going to be very tough. And I talked about this with, Janet Heimlich many years ago, that the more, the higher the status of the woman, the fewer the men she's going to want to date. And her high status makes her less dateable for men. And women invent all of this stuff like, well, I guess men are just intimidated by my brilliance and they're just intimidated by strong women. No, that's I mean, I personally like strong women. My wife's a very strong and passionate and great woman. I am well-educated too, but I like all of that. It's just that we're looking for a wife and mother to our children. And it's not that you're a strong woman. It's that you will be dissatisfied with raising children because you'll always feel like you're destined for something better. And of course, you've absorbed, particularly in the liberal arts, you've absorbed a lot of education that means that you're going to look at being a homemaker as a terrible, negative, horrible, awful, wretched thing. So what can I say? It's not a good deal for a man. All right. So I wrote about this in my novel, The Present, which you should definitely get. It's available for free at freedomain.com/books. But this is from 1953. It just as sort of feminism was kicking in and women really wanted to work. And this is a movie called Half a Hero. And you should listen to this. It's about 2 minutes. Absolutely worth listening to. Hang on a sec here. Here we go.
Your arm stops. Thank you, Mr. Payson. Hey, you're very kind to give so much, especially these days. I suppose you're having the same trouble that everybody else is.
We were.
Were?
Till I got a job. I believe that marriage is a partnership, and I want to pull my weight, too.
That's so.
George didn't want me to work on account of Bootsy. That's our little boy. He's 3. But I said, George, if we're in double harness, then we ought to pull together. Didn't I, George?
Yes, dear.
So every morning when George goes to New York to work, I go with him, don't I, George?
Yes, dear.
Oh, dear, that's Bootsy's hunger howl. Excuse me.
No. Well, thanks again, Mr. Payson.
Good night, Mr. Dobbs.
Good night now.
Mr. Dobbs?
Yes, sir?
There's something I've got to tell you.
Yes?
You love your wife, don't you?
Sure.
Me too.
My wife?
No, mine.
Oh.
I'm nuts about her. All I want is to make her happy, and if it makes her happy to think she's helping out, I'm not going to tell her any different.
Isn't she helping out?
We'll figure it out. Her job pays her $53 a week. Well, after withholding, that's $43.60. It costs $30 a week to get an all-day sitter for the baby. It costs $4 a week railroad fare to New York, and that's just to the railroad station, remember. And there's buses to and from the job. It's another dollar a week. Only twice a week she's late getting in and has to take a cab. It's another dollar. You figuring?
Yeah, that's up to $36.
Okay, lunch is $5 a week. Coffee at 11 and 4, that's another dollar. That makes $42. Now let's take that sitter. That woman eats her own weight every day. My food bill's up at least $5 a week since she came to work for us. And once a week, like clockwork, she calls in sick. Well, my wife can't stay home with the baby on account of she's afraid she'll lose her job. So who stays home? Right. Me. And I get docked $18.
Well, that amounts to $65.
She brings home $43.60 and I shell out $65. By helping me out, she's costing me a little over $20 a week.
Can't win, can you?
I just thought I'd tell you in case you were thinking of trying it.
Thanks, sir. Okay.
So, yeah, isn't that wild? Isn't that wild? Long, long time ago. 70 years, right? 70 years ago. 71, in fact. So, there was something about feminism. And this is interesting, too. D&D, right? Dungeons and Dragons. And what they've done, apparently, is they've taken away... So there's elves and dwarves and humans and halflings or hobbits and so on. And they have changed them all so that races, different races in D&D don't have positive or negative attributes, which is a shame because it made for a lot more variety and diversity in the game. But of course, they've gotten rid of that. This I thought was funny. What does it mean when this light comes on? It's a car on fire. That was funny. This is interesting too, just how... This pendulum goes. In 1976, 5% of high school seniors were straight edge, no alcohol, no cigarettes, no marijuana in the prior month. I was an athlete in high school, so I was, of course, one of those people. In 2021, nearly 40% of high school seniors were straight edge. Isn't that wild? Now, that's a little less rebelliousness and so on, but anyway, people are getting cleaner, the pendulum swings. Sourced from Reddit. This is sort of very interesting. Guy says, I work in a call center and so do 17 million people around the world. 95% of costs associated with call centers are due to staffing. And it's a $300 billion industry. I've recently been made aware of a demo with a new call center AI agent, and I immediately started looking for a different career. The bad part is my job and everyone else's in this industry is over. The good part is you will never be put on hold again. The AI agent will likely already know who you are when you call, have predicted the issue you're most likely having, and be ready to offer the solution to that issue. Most people will not be able to tell they're talking to an AI agent. 2 years max for the call centers to train these friendly, helpful AIs in every possible scenario, implement them, and fire everyone. AI will take all our jobs. Fine by me, working in a call center sucks. Somebody replied, our corporation recently switched to fully automated customer service and most people can't tell. When they can, they get over it. The new demo I saw says someone else, the latest AI was friendlier, smarter, and more helpful than half the people I work with. Yeah. It is tough. You know, it seems like, I mean, sometimes it's just heavily accented people that sound like they're shouting through a tin can, and it's really, really tough. This I thought was interesting. I wouldn't have guessed this data. So this person writes, 1% of people are responsible for 24% of the health spending in America, and 5% of people are responsible for just over half. Isn't that wild? Top 10% are 67% and so on. Isn't that wild? The bottom 50% are only 3%, right? The bottom 50% of spenders basically don't spend anything. The top percentiles use ambulances, require inpatient care, and take lots of quite expensive medications. If we swap total spending out for pocket spending, then the bottom 50% are averaging nearly no spending at all, and ambulatory events come to dominate what high spenders pay for. Obvious rejoinders to bring up sex and age. Women have special health needs, and everyone spends a lot when they're old. True, but disproportionality is mostly independent of age. Here's age 65 plus only, and still, top 1% of people are 17% of the spending. Sex doesn't make a huge difference, and in fact is predictably reserved for absent in youth and old age. It is really remarkable, he says, just how few people drive health spending. The majority of people have no unmet health needs, and most with unmet needs have only minor ones. The very select few make high average health spending possible. He says, after posting this, I've seen people claiming this necessarily represents waste, and that I meant that. This is due to age. This is due to momentary sickness, etc. No, to put the mat at bed, here's lifetime spending disproportionality from age 70. Bottom 50% are still only 19%. And Elon Musk wrote, vast majority of healthcare spending is near end of life, and obesity often plays a major role. GLP and other hunger inhibitors might be the single biggest positive effect on healthcare and quality of life in the 21st century. Yeah, I mean, the people who pursue unhealthy lifestyle habits, I get quite angry. I'm just telling you personally, I get quite angry at people who pursue bad health decisions because they are taking away healthcare from emergency needs, right? So everybody who's fat, everybody who doesn't exercise, everybody who smokes, everybody who drinks to excess, everybody who eats badly and doesn't get enough sleep, and, you know, they are equivalent to me to drunk drivers. They're just causing random chaos and problems in the world, and it really is quite frustrating and annoying. And especially if it's their own life, their own choice, I think that's bad as a whole. But the fact is that they usually have their fat fingers in my wallet, and that actually gets quite frustrating. All right. This is wild. So my mom says, I don't know if I can mute this. Yes, I can. My mom said she used to break hearts back in the day. So let's look at this woman. And this is how she looked when she was younger. That's a lot of hair. Crazy. Yeah, that is, Pearl Davis was saying this is a kind of fraud, yeah. Oh, yeah, you can pause this and read this if you want, but this is, of course, there's lots of exceptions, but this is women from the age of 18 every year, what some say, up to 37. Rough. To perfect your sleep. The psychology of manipulation. I thought this was interesting, right? So gaslighting, using denial, lying, misinformation, and contradiction to make you doubt your sanity, memory, and perception. Do this, disengage, and walk away. Victimhood, designed to exploit your goodwill, guilty conscience, protective and nurturing instinct in order to benefit personally. Do this. Don't get emotionally involved or let go of that relationship. 3. Guilt tripping. It's a passive-aggressive way to remind you of something bad you did in order to make them want to make up for it. I think make you want to make up for it. Respond with empathy, but trust your intuitions. Pretend ignorance, playing dumb in order to get away with behavior or things. Do this. Judge action, not the intention. You know, I've been saying this for years and years and years in the call-in show. Don't try and judge intentions, only judge actions. Negative humor. Make critical remarks disguised as sarcasm or humor to make you feel inferior or less secure. Do this. Remain calm, smile, and put that person in the spotlight by asking questions. Projection. Criticizing others for the things they do themselves as well. Do this. Don't take the bait and remove yourself from the arena. Constant criticism. Constantly marginalizing, ridicule, and dismissing you to make you feel inferior and to make them feel superior. Say thank you and get on with your life. Yeah, I don't do essential criticism. Certainly not anymore. I thought this is kind of cool. Baby chameleons helping with pest control. You got some bugs on the wall. And some of these I, of course, have for my daughter. It's just wild. I was going to do this on a show. I think it'll be coming up. Anti-bucket list. What's something you'll never do again? Let's go camping. These women who fly.
Doubt he was already flying.
Okay, sorry.
2 days before my birthday, I matched with this man on Hinge. He goes, "How adventurous are you?" I said, "I would take a flight with you if you book it." And that's how I ended up in Miami. Turns out he was already flying there that day when he messaged me, and he also lives here. So many flights were canceled because of the technology outage, but I was so lucky that everything went so smoothly. I ran into a friend with his girlfriend, and they were on the same flight as me going for her birthday. We went to meet this Hinge man together, and they became my safety check-in points for the entire trip. He took me to get a pre-dinner snack at Lido at the Standard Hotel and show me around, and then went back to his.
Okay, so there. So this is Ted Bundy would put up Wilt numbers in this generation. I guess that's Wilt Chamberlain sleeping with women. And yeah, this thing where women are just thrilled to go out and meet strangers who are paying for them. Oh, I don't know, man. It just seems really, really dicey. Now, this one was pretty wild. Just look at this. 5.5 million views. This woman, Lori Penny, wrote, "Women don't owe the world children. They don't owe men babies. And they don't owe you an explanation." I think that's interesting. That's interesting. Of course, women don't owe the world's children. That's fine. But if you're going to go down the road of not owing the world, that's fine, as long as the not owing is both ways, right? So if women don't owe the world children, that's fine. Then they can make their own choices and not provide for the next generation. That's fine. But then men don't owe women alimony. Men don't owe women, you know, men pay about twice in taxes what they receive in benefits, and women receive about twice in benefits what they pay in taxes. So that should all go away. Single mother welfare state should go away. Old age pensions that disproportionately benefit women should go away because they contribute less and take out more because they live longer. And we should get rid of equal pay for work of equal value and all of these women hiring initiatives because nobody owes you a job. So I think that's interesting. I like the idea of saying women don't owe the world anything, as long as it's very much accepted that the world then doesn't owe women anything at all. Men don't owe women protection in the world. Men don't owe women a seat. There shouldn't be any chivalry. Men don't owe women paying for dates, and women can pay for dates equally. And so on. So, yes, if you want to uncouple obligations, that's fine. But you are opening the door to men ceasing to have obligations towards women. And that's interesting. Now, of course, women cannot provide the world children, and that's fine. But if men don't pay the taxes that women want, men go to jail. So I think she's opening up a very interesting thing here. And of course, she would never imagine, I think, these kinds of responses, but that's where this will lead, I'm sure. All right. Apparently, height doesn't predict men sleeping around, but what about relationships? Are taller men less likely to be single? Whoa, did I do there? Let's go back here. It not the best, not the very best. Ah, yes, here we go. Best interface. When women tend to report a preference for taller men, sorry, projection. Women do tend to report a preference for taller men, but to what extent does this translate to actual mate selection or pairings? Ideal height preferences correlate very weakly with actual partner height. In speed dates, men falling outside of women's preferred height range incur a relatively small penalty, though men falling below it are punished more than those who fall above it. Right? A sort of mating for height is about 0.25, which is less than would arise from simply enforcing the male taller norm. There are only slightly more couples with taller men than you'd expect by chance. So there's a very small effect of height on men's relationship status. At least past the mid-20s or so, taller people may have later starts due to slower life history strategies. A Cohen's D hovering around 0.1 emerges, 1/10 of a standard deviation, essentially. So you understand that height is, you know, what they call a shit test, which is you're supposed to be insecure about your height in the same way you're supposed to be insecure about your baldness. But if you're not insecure about it, the women tend not to care at all. Okay. So this, I think, is very interesting. Come on a first date with me. This is a woman. She's 33. She says that at the end, but let's look at the beginning.
First date right now. I spilled on myself in the car. It's oil. There's nothing I can do about it. We're going to a really nice Mediterranean restaurant. I am really hopeful for this one. So I think like an existential crisis right now because the date, lovely, lovely human. Absolutely lovely human. I am struggling with the fact that I am not easily attracted to people. And that goes for girls and boys. I am just not easily attracted to people. I guess I'm just like a little frustrated with myself because someone can be like so perfectly kind and sweet and all of that. And I just don't feel like that initial chemistry. Like it's like a block. I can count on my hands how many times I have had the chemistry I'm talking about with people. Actually, I think you can count on only one hand. Like, to be absolutely frank, and I am 33 years old. I know it's going to take time. I'm just really frustrated with myself. Even when someone's like absolutely like perfect on paper, I don't know what I mean by that.
Yeah, this is very sad. So she's had these guys that she has these butterflies for, but it doesn't work. And it's really sad. And this woman, I think, is a guy who writes, the Disney fantasy that women have of the perfect person is less and less likely to materialize for every single experience they have that is like this. This is accelerated drastically when they get rejected or ghosted by dudes they actually feel the butterflies for. Chemistry is volatile. Chemistry is fine. Chemistry is what gets turned on when you have very short-term mating strategies. Chemistry is R-selected for those who follow my Gene Wars presentations. Chemistry is R-selected and really, really quite tragic. Ribbity Toilet. That's from Skibbity Toilet. I'll leave this for you. Harvard University interview. 7 men have 7 wives. Each man and each wife have 7 children. What's the total number of people? Now, it depends whether you say each man and each wife have 7 children, which would be 14 per family, or whether each man and each wife have 7 children in that. It's 7 for the family as a whole, and you have to remember to count the man and the wife and so on. So yeah, let me know what you get. This is pretty cool. It's a lake. Where is this? This was in Faroe Islands. Look at that. That is a lake that's hanging over the ocean. It looks like something out of Minecraft. It's pretty neat. For adults under 50, the primary argument against having children isn't an economic one, it's cultural. I just don't want it. If you believe that children are essential to building a good, dynamic society, you're about to learn that a growing number of young people disagree with you. The question we have to ask is why. 57% of adults under 50 who say they're unlikely to ever have kids say a major reason is they just don't want it. So isn't that wild? Yeah, concerns about the state of the world, I understand that. Right? There's a great old WKRP where the older couple has, the woman gets pregnant, and he says, the man says, these are troubled times, and she says, they've been saying that for 5,000 years. So, yeah, just don't want to. Now, non-parenting has become more fun because you've got movies, video games, streaming services, travel is cheaper and easier than it's almost ever been before. So I understand that not having children has become a lot more fun. Having children in a lot of ways has become a lot less fun because they're getting really heavily indoctrinated and so on. But, you know, there's still lots of options. Okay, notice husband's choosing painkillers must have a signed note from their wife. Fair enough. Look at this. Look at this sheep. Shrek the sheep got lost and lived in a cave for 6 years, gets around 60 pounds of wool removed. I guess they're bred to just keep having wolves. I guess that they're just bred to keep growing, because this wouldn't make any sense in nature, but they're bred to just keep growing the wool, I guess, right? Imagine finding both love and friendship in one person. I saved this and sent it to my wife. The Mr. Beast stuff, I've been following it. It's interesting. He's always struck me as a little psycho and sinister, but, you know, I guess it's kind of easy to say now. But it's not looking good. But, you know, at least he's kept his YouTube platform.
In history spanning 50.
So this is interesting because so rarely do you get to get someone in a debate like this. Check this out. This is a Korean guy talking.
But some societies, like Koreans, they might have a god complex, but they don't have a history of oppression.
Are you fucking out of your mind?
Yeah, what the fuck?
Koreans didn't have slaves.
Did Koreans have slaves?
Yeah, Google that.
Yeah, because I think that's fucking wrong.
We were
Korea
about
had
the
longest unbroken chain of slavery of any society in history, spanning 1,500 years. Fuck off.
That's what it says. Zoom it in. My eyes are blurry. I want to read it, all right?
Read it out loud.
Korea had the longest unbroken chain of slavery of any society in history.
You guys are fucking scumbags.
We're scumbags.
I like how he seems to take it being corrected with some good nature. That's pretty funny. My wife and I play pickleball, so I saved this for her. Guide to critical thinking. You can pause in and look at this if you want. I won't go through each of these because I've got a whole book called Art of the Argument at artoftheargument.com. Keeping track of the Canadian economy, always exciting. I love this one. Hey, McDonald's, I ordered a sundae, but instead you gave me the souls of the damned. Did I have to pay extra for this? That will actually haunt your dreams. Reminds me of my wonderful pickup line when I was 12 and liked a girl at McDonald's, and I walked up and very confidently said, "Hey, I like a sundae so big I can't see Monday." 5-year-old me wanting to be Vegeta. I guess he's got the widow's peak. And then me now, ultimate widow's peak. That's not how I went bald. All right. Kind of true here. Brain cells die, skin cells die, and even hair cells die. But the fat cells in my stomach must have accepted Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior, since they seem to have eternal life. Actually, of course, I thought you could lose weight and lose fat. I found out then that fat cells only shrink. But then eventually, they do die off. I was reading about that, right? All right. 7 psychological traits of great men, according to Carl Jung. 1, an ambitious striving after the highest goals. Check. 2, opposition to all stupidity, narrow-mindedness, injustice, and laziness. Check. 3, willingness to make sacrifices for what is regarded as right, sometimes bordering on heroism. Check. 4, perseverance. Check. 5, inflexibility and toughness of will. Check. 6, a curiosity that does not shrink even from the riddles of the universe. Check. Finally, a revolutionary spirit which strives to put a new face upon the world. Check. I hope that you're aiming for that too. This I thought was quite sad. This guy writes, isn't that Elon Musk's kid's name? One thing I kind of regret is in my early 20s, I thought it was evil and capitalist to have a career path and retirement plan and to own a house and lawn, so I quit everything to be a drunk for a decade and ruined my life instead. Yes, that is a challenge. All right, more Canadian stuff. This is quite sad. And she's pretty and she's always going to get the ring light and the right to makeup and so on. But you got to hear this. So the pretty girls, what is it someone once said that all the hot girls have stomach issues and sleep with teddy bears? And that's kind of interesting. I've known a lot of very attractive women who have just these sort of myriad health issues. And one of the reasons they glow up their exterior is their interior feels pretty rough and bad. So let me just play this. And you don't always know what kind of hell is going on inside. And it is a little tempting to sit there and say, this is grim justice because this woman, I think, has promoted don't settle, travel, and you know, maybe avoid the kid thing. And a lot of people who do that get into their 30s. A lot of women who do that and say that get into their 30s. And, you know, as one woman memorably said, to me, I spent all of my 20s trying not to get pregnant. Now I've spent all of my 30s trying to get pregnant. It's pretty wretched. So let's listen to her. Let's get back to the beginning here.
I started the egg freezing process. I did some preliminary tests, which showed that my egg count is really low. And I know a lot of women struggle with this. I had a ovarian surgery last January, and I knew that I have endometriosis and had like a giant cyst on my ovary.
Yeah, I mean, women's reproductive furnaces, it's like a half satanic volcano down there for a lot of women, periods. If you've known women with, I've never dated anyone with endometriosis, but I've known some women who've had endometriosis. Oof, it is just hell on wheels.
And the doctors told me that. The doctors did tell me that that might affect my fertility.
There's a funny thing. I watched a documentary many years ago on Madonna. Madonna had her own documentary. And she was dating this guy, Warren Beatty, and she went to a doctor for throat issues from singing. And somebody was saying, well, this is a serious medical issue. Well, why do you want this on camera? And Warren Beatty was in the background, I think, saying, she doesn't even want to live off camera, right? That if you're feeling emotional and the first thing you say is, my God, I've got to turn on the camera and tell the world to get lots of attention and sympathy and so on, that's tough. It is also interesting, of course, to see this woman. She's got a nice, tidy, clean apartment. I think she's an influencer. This woman says, I went on a podcast with this woman. Her entire life perspective was never settling. Her entire brand is being a bougie best friend. Don't know what that means. She has nearly 300,000 or more followers across multiple platforms. But she's got a really tidy apartment. She it's really clean and it's all gray. And she has a pet. There's no man. I don't think there's a ring. No, I don't see the ring. So it's really, really tragic and sad. But, you know, if the first thing you want to do when you're emotional is turn on the camera, you might be a little outwardly directed.
But we didn't even start like the actual egg freezing, so.
The we, I think, refers.
It still might be that my eggs.
Sorry, the we, I think, refers to her doctors here. Yeah, that's not on her ring finger, so I don't think she's married.
They didn't even start like the actual egg freezing, so it still might be that my eggs are high quality, but they are, they're just not a lot of them. It's just so sad. I've been like crying the entire day. And you know, people say like, oh, you're not alone. This happens to so many women, but I mean
it. And it is tough, you know, because yeah, she's pretty for sure. And I don't know, is she in her 30s? I think she's in her 30s, so you know, might dye her hair, I don't know. But she's obviously worked hard, and that's fine, to make her exterior look pretty and all of that. And yet, if the eggs are dead, it's just, you know, it's a pretty shell, but nothing inside. Because like all of this beauty, all of the physical attractiveness that she has is designed to show egg quality. And I can't tell you how devastating it is for women who are very pretty in particular, all women as a whole, but women who are very pretty in particular, when they realize that the eggs are half dead, all dead, mostly dead, somewhat dead, and they start to go through this process, their prettiness collapses in on itself. It really is extraordinarily tough because the purpose of the prettiness is to show egg quality. And of course, we have, I don't know if she's had work done. It looks, if she's in her 30s, it looks like she's had some work done. I don't know, obviously, but what do I know about these things as a whole? But she doesn't seem, I think, looks to me like she's had Botox or something, because no wrinkles anywhere on the face, which it seems like she's in her 30s. But anyway, maybe she's not. I don't know. Let's see.
It feels really, feels very alone, lonely. Like, I just feel this giant pain in my stomach right now. How's your day going?
Yeah, so that's rough. Is there any other details down here? She has a partner. She seems very happy in her relationship. Yeah. I don't know how old she is. Yeah, it's a little easier for men to be childless because we just have so much more time to deal with it, right? So anyway, yeah, it's very sad, very sad. All right, let's see here. And what else? Oh, yeah, confessing was selfish. So my dying wife admitted she never married me, only married me to get out of poverty. I'm utterly gutted. My wife has terminal cancer. She began within the next few short months. She's been at peace with this and even seems happy about it. I've spent every moment at her side since her diagnosis and was there when it got rough. I went to every chemo treatment with her and was there to hear all the bad news. Cancer aside, we did everything together. We went on dates, played games, tried new places, traveled to have a daughter who's 9. My wife came from a deep, deep poverty, Mr. Johnson. And it was chance that we met. She was a waitress, and I was smitten from the moment I laid eyes on her. She reciprocated my feelings quickly. But according to my wife, she never truly loved me. She liked me, but she didn't love me. She had no one else in her heart, but I wasn't the one for her. She just married me to get out of poverty. To her, we were like roommates who had sex and went on dates sometimes. To me, she was the love of my life and my universe. I have to face losing her alongside this information and navigate how to be a single dad. Yes, It's the question for a man, right? So the question for a man is, if you go on a business trip and you get drunk and you sleep with a woman, you're never going to see her again. You're married, right? And you go on a business trip, you sleep with a woman, you're never going to see her again. Do you say anything? Or do you just swallow it and just try to be a better person and move on with your life? You know, I can understand the case both ways. I lean a little bit more to, if you've done something wrong and it's not going to affect your future in any practical and material way. It's different, of course, if you fall in love with the woman or whatever it is. But you have a bad drunken night. You make a stupid decision, a wrong decision. Do you come home and confess everything to your wife or vice versa to your husband? Assuming you get tested for STDs and you're clean and like all of this kind of stuff, right? I can see the case both ways, but I don't know what this truth thing is that the wife is trying to get her. See, the problem is that, and what is selfish about this, right? So when the wife says, oh, I'd never loved you, I only married you for your money, the problem is that's going to affect the father's relationship with the daughter. If the father believes that his wife absolutely loved him, then he's going to feel happier and be closer to his daughter. So this is really pretty savage, and it is a real sabotage, I think. All right. This, I thought, was very interesting. You cannot wish for both strong character and an easy life. The price of each is the other. So I thought that was very true and actually quite deep. All right. Well, I'll stop here. I wish you the very best. Thank you, of course, for your support at freedomain.com/donate. Lots of love from up here in Canada. And I hope you're having a wonderful day.